Great. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Other Modern. If you have never heard this podcast before, this is a custom Magic MSCM specifically constructed podcast that I host with a rotating guest of co-hosts, Dodger being the perennial one. Thankfully, joining me today is Dodger.
Hey, the very same. What's up, everybody?
But if you are familiar with The Other Modern, or if you scroll down ever so slightly on Spotify, you'll notice that the last episode of The Other Modern was released in May of 2021. It was the Grand Prix Toledo decklist review, and then we never released another episode of it again. But hey, we've decided to bring it back, partially because MSCM is an exciting place, and I think in general, we kind of stopped doing it because both of us were kind of at a downswing in MSCM at that time. But to kind of give a brief run through of the history, where we've been since then, and also just like kind of how much has changed, I'm gonna give some quick notes, and then the rest of this episode is just going to be us kind of talking a bunch and catching Dodger up on what has happened in MSCM. So, as mentioned, the last episode was Grand Prix Toledo. Dodger would end up winning Grand Prix Toledo with Bug Holcomb, which was one of the
Oh
last
yeah. Sorry about
yeah.
that.
One of the
That thing
last
was
three
fun.
champions you got. It was that, your season champion immediately afterwards, and then one or two GPs later, a couple GPs later in Grand Prix Vienna, you got Nightmares Unseen for Grixis Garth.
Yes.
That was in August 2021. And then 3 months later, in November, you played your last GP before quitting the format. You briefly came back in 2022 in June to qualify for wildcard stuff and then stepped out. So it's been like a little bit over 2 years since you've been seriously playing MSCM, and it's been at least a year and a half since you were like, even dabbling.
That is really crazy, honestly. Like,
Yeah.
it's hard to contextualize to myself like exactly how long ago it was that I first joined MSCM, but like, I guess it's just like honestly, I kind of earmark the pandemic era. It's almost synonymous with my experience being a heavy MSCM player. For kind of obvious reasons, you're stuck inside doing nothing.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
No, I mean, similarly, because I was stepping out of MSCM briefly before the pandemic happened because I was starting to get really excited about canon formats and like going to tournaments and stuff, and MSCM was in a pretty unhealthy place. And then the pandemic and Ikoria as a 1-2 punch meant that I no longer really cared about canon tournaments as much. And then we ended up spending a bunch of time and effort making MSCM like a playable format with the first May Madness.
Yeah, it's cool because I think I joined the format like pretty much at the same time as it had a renaissance, but it had basically nothing to do with me being there. And I think it was like I just got to experience, this burgeoning community, and become like a premier part of it, like from the get-go. So that was it was a really good experience and definitely one that I needed at the time. And I'm excited to, kind of get more up to speed with what's happened since then, what the current state of the format is right now, and hopefully have some opinions about it.
Yeah. And I guess also for a partial rundown of where I've been since the last episode of The Other Modern, I similarly kind of took I stepped back in 2022. I still played in five GPs, but given that I previously was playing in every single GP and a bunch in leagues, that was tantamount to quitting the format. And then I also took a hiatus as a council member for basically the entirety of 2023. And also the first half of the year I didn't play in like any of the GPs. But I'm back in force now, as we'll get to in a bit. So The quick hits that we're going to talk about, or not quick hits, I guess, but the kind of broad points, we're going to talk about some of the sets that have come out during this meantime. And I guess in particular, not that the ones that have come out while Dodger has been gone, basically. So there technically was another pair of sets that came out after we recorded the last episode, but before you dipped, one of which was Adventures of Anora. But we're going to talk about releases, bannings, unbannings, some of the notable champions that have come out, some of my incredible accolades and successes, and a couple of the decks. So yeah, let's get right underway.
Sick. So first on the list, actually, I did want to just point out, you know what I thought was really funny was the last deck I ever built for MCM was Grixis Garth.
Mm-hmm.
And that deck actually became really popular, right? Like,
yeah.
I think it was like a premier archetype or something. And it was so weird because I was so used to like playing decks that literally no one else was playing. And like, even if I was having success with them, people wouldn't really like pick them up. So that was honestly, it's one of the few times when like I've been a trendsetter in this kind of thing, and it was really cool. So,
I think Grixis Garth was actually kind of a weird harbinger of a slightly dark period in MSEM, where you kind of figured out it's not quite a magic sauce, but you kind of figured out a really good balance and deck building style that I think actually the Holcomb deck. Kind of like was a really early prototype of that just did a lot of curve compression stuff that we would see impact other formats in some kind of spooky ways. And a couple GPs after Grixis Garth win, there was a Jeskai Garth deck that won that was just like kind of insane. And in general, I would say that era of the format was just really defined by one mana threats and Cosmic Sinkhole in a way that I think was pretty unhealthy.
So this I remember a conversation about the big bad one mana threats. And the only one that I remember was Mystery of the Crashed Craft. But there's probably others that I
so one of the others you actually designed.
Oh, is this okay, yeah.
This is one of the Idyllic Odyssey errors.
This is the jellyfish incident. Okay.
Yeah.
I am aware.
The third one is Embodied Soul from Arcadai.
So all those cards got nerfed.
Yeah. Every single one of them.
Nice, let's go. Hey, do you wanna I feel like I've told this story before, but do you wanna hear the story about how we got 3/3 Epsilon
in MCM? Yeah.
Or do you know this story already?
I don't remember it.
Okay, so this is pretty wild. So this card I think, it's a healthy part of the format now. I think Epsilon is 2/2 appears to be, a great card. It is from the custom set Cryptids of Belenon, which is a set that I loved quite a bit, designed by Squid Pizza. And I believe we took in this card as part of the New Horizons set, which had a bunch of cards from previously submitted sets. Am I wrong?
Correct. That is correct.
Or maybe it was a wild card thing. I don't know. Whatever.
No, I'm pretty
confident. It was a one-off. So, let me see if I can get the details right. So, Mystery of the Crashed Craft. When Squid Pizza submitted Cryptids of Belenon to me for feedback, I actually pointed out to Squid Pizza. I was like, "Hey, this Epsilon as a 3/3 might be too strong." And then Squid Pizza was like, okay, I agree. Epsilon's now a 2/2. But when I was creating the list of options for cards that could be in New Horizons from Cryptids of Belenon, I included an image of Mystery of the Crash Craft where Epsilon was in fact a 3/3. And that card won the vote. We added it to the format as a 3/3. I did not notice that Squid Pizza had since made the change to make it a 2/2. So this is one of those rare cases where a card being overpowered is 100% not the designer's fault. I don't think Squid Pizza even noticed that we had 3/3 Epsilon in the format, so it's just like this incredible snafu that I thought was very funny after the fact. That's a funny story of how we got invaded by an alien.
So,
I feel like I derailed this a lot, but
No.
I just like talking about this shit again, you know. It's fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what people tune into this episode for. Like, we do not have that structure or program. So and I think we all benefit from that being the case. So quickly running through the six releases that have happened since your departure, we had Fanov plus Karina's Expeditions, Pan Zhao and Nung Zhao and Bloom, Arcanum Academia, MSEM Jumpstart, and VHS, then Road to Karumapu and Sparks, and then Animus Vox, Theros Triumphant, and the most recent one, which was Act of the Neverending Stage and MSEM Legends. So I think the PAX / NGB era was like one of the times I was least active in MSEM. I had some kind of frustrating games in the Karina's era where just like I kept playing in these control mirrors that made me feel beyond miserable. And I only liked playing control in the format at the time. So I think that was one of the reasons I slowly dipped.
So of the sets you listed, I'm definitely very familiar with the releases from Fainav through Nung Jiao and Bloom.
Mm-hmm.
And then Arcana Academia and VHS, I definitely remember looking at, although I don't think I was paying attention when they were added.
I think that was the wild card that you voted in.
There's no way. No, because, I definitely voted on them before, but I don't think I was on the council when they were added.
No, because that was a wild card period, wasn't it? And that was the last...
So that is the wild card where Awakening an Old Dude was in it, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So I definitely, I voted in that wild card as a member of the community, yes.
As a normie, I think is the term.
Ah, thank you. Thank you for dumbing it down for all our listeners. Appreciate that. And then beyond that, Road to Karumapu, definitely familiar with that one. Sparks of Revolution, I think I've read it like, once or twice.
Sparks of Revolution is actually the Valeria set in MSEM. This is Sparks of a Multiverse, not to be confused.
Oh, right. Yeah, sorry. I had the right one in my head, just got the name wrong. This is the set with like a bajillion planeswalkers.
Yes.
Okay. And then the other four, Animus Vox, Theros Triumphant, Act, and this Legend set, I have never looked at.
Were you not around for the? I guess you were around for part of the. You were around for a little bit of the Animus Vox spoiler season, but not really. And you haven't played with any of the cards, certainly.
I don't know. I've been kind of in and out of like paying attention to stuff.
Understandable.
Yeah, I think I've been like in the servers, but at least for the preview stuff on MSC, I haven't been really reading the thread.
I think of these releases, most of them are like. Relatively, none of these were like high watermark power level sets in the way that I think you could point to some other sets like more of our era, quote unquote.
Not even the one you designed? Just kidding.
I mean, hey, I had a longer nerf list than Theros Triumphant, but it was not by much.
A Mako set in here.
Yeah.
Okay. Actually, how nerfed was Alara really? Because I feel like it had this mythical reputation, but I don't remember very many cards being nerfed after the set was released.
No, both Theros and Alara, I think, are sets where Mako put a lot of their power in very visible places, which is really appreciated. It is kind of egregious when someone tries to print 4-mana Summit Guardian, but also at least you know it's 4-mana Summit Guardian and why that's not an okay thing.
I still think that card did nothing wrong. Like, unironically.
Okay. we don't need to litigate the 4-mana double Thalia.
Wait, what does this thing do again?
It was submitted
as 4-mana
5-4 double Thalia, and now it's a 5-drop, and it's still some play.
Some Chupacabras, guys. Come on. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, that card seems pretty good if you play it on turn three or something. So
yeah. And Theros Triumphant also had, like, a couple of those cards, like Cinderhoof Minotaur. But I think in general, the Monko sets just don't need too many nerfs after the fact, because there are a couple of, like, you know, Ethereum Leviathan hiding in plain sight, but for the most part, yeah, there's not a lot of, like, oh, wow, we didn't realize how broken that effect would be.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that because, you know, I think I went too well of, like, haha, Mako sets OP, but, like, I figured, you know, there is a reason for the meme, but also it's, like, not, it's a bit overblown, I would say, so.
Also fair.
Yeah. So did
yeah.
you want to like talk about these sets at all, or just kind of mention that they are around?
Yeah,
I kind of understand the gist of all of them.
Yeah, I think we're good to just kind of mention that they're around. And I think, you know, if there was more retrospectives or reviews, I'm sure we would have a lot to say on a bunch of them. But for the most part, I think there's a nice, like, if you look at it, there's a really nice variety of designers. I don't think any of the same designers represented more than once here. Yeah, I'm not seeing.
No, I think you're right. Yeah.
Oh, sorry, Cajun's here twice with Karina's and Sparks. But other than Cajun, and a bunch of, you know, there's council sets, there's non-council sets, two community sets in there. Generally, a lot of cool, you know, the diversity that we love in the format, very much represented there. But let's get to the bannings.
This is fun.
So I think all of these cards were printed all these cards existed when you were actively playing. So none of these are curveballs.
Okay, on this list, I'm just seeing Hellbent Speed, and I'm like, what the hell took us so long, man? Oh my goodness.
I can tell you something else. When we were originally looking to hit that card, someone was suggesting hitting Ethereum Sculptor instead, and I just, like, brought up a screenshot of a time, like, you know, 6 months before that point, where I said, if we ever start discussing hitting Ethereum Sculptor, we've gone too far, and we just need to start breaking, you know, just nerf and ban and nerf and ban until no longer an issue.
You brought the receipts. I like it. Wait, what does Hellbent Speed do again? I gotta look this up.
So Hellbent Speed is...
Oh, yeah, no, this card's pretty good.
Yeah, cost reducer that also makes all your things cantrip.
I like that the deck was around. I think it was cool that we had a deck called Crazy Train. And I also think it's a really good thing for a community when you have players who, like, have a signature deck, you know, because it feels like Yu-Gi-Oh!
Yeah.
Like, it's like, you know, I mean, you've probably imagined, like, what archetype you would have if you were, like, a Yu-Gi-Oh! Character, right?
Absolutely.
Like, I'd be Gladiator Beasts, for sure. Anyway, listeners, tell us what you think. Okay, so Hellbent Speed, I definitely think banning it is, you know, like, it was probably unhealthy to exist in the state it was in before, and I can get wanting to ban it instead of, like, having it be, like, some watered-down version that's just, like, not even usable, really, you know?
I think one of the things that's true about a couple of the cards on this ban list is there's a lot of cards here that were legal for a very long time, and just eventually we hit critical density of both effects in the format and also, like, skill of brewers that just started breaking a bunch of these things. And I think, you know, I think there's an era in which you did a lot of, like, breaking fair cards, and we did a good job of catching up with that. But neither you nor I ever really, like, iterated that much in the Storm space. At least I did. I stopped playing Storm when we banned Ebb and Flow, because that was the only Storm deck I was playing.
Yeah, because I like having fun. Jeez.
Yeah, exactly. You like fear magic.
Sorry, Storm players.
Swing for 60 on turn 3, like a reasonable fair deck.
Okay, I did that by accident, though. I didn't go in planning to do that.
It was just a bit. One other card here that might bring a smile to your eye is Beck in the Pack, because one of the last quotes that I have from you in format feedback is you saying, Beck in the Pack is an utterly ridiculous card. Why is this in the format?
Yeah, that was, I mean, probably a bit harsher than I needed to be, but yeah, I think, I feel like we all, like, didn't really look at that card too closely, and then as soon as I saw it start being played, I was like, wait, so you're getting, like, plus 3 or 4 mana with this card, like, Isn't that pretty good? I just thought it was funny that, like, you know, we had such a hard stance on things like randomating based on power, but then we were just doing this, and it's like,
yeah,
this isn't really. And then the reworked version was like an even stronger card in many ways. So
I don't remember the pre-rework version. What was the pre-rework version?
Okay, so I think the pre-rework version, I don't remember which one came first or which one came second. One of the versions was like a relative toughness thing. Like you get something with one bigger toughness or
game
toughness or something like that.
I think that one didn't make it to live. I think the copy one is the only one that we got.
Okay,
on live.
The copy one goes down in mana value, and then you get a copy of the thing you get, right?
Yeah. So the big thing there is if you remember the old Podlight decks that I used to play a bunch, they were actually spending mana to cast your What Lurks Beyond over and over again. And one of the breakthroughs that Purple and Ricky made on the archetype was we'd actually picked up a bunch of cards that let you free cast pods.
There's so many of those. Yeah.
That you just like go arbitrarily up and down the chain pretty easily once you started, you know, going off. So you would start with a 3-drop and then you would pay 2 mana and you would end up with like a 6-drop plus multiple 4-drops in play. And it's just like all of this other nonsense. It's like, oh, see.
Yeah, and I feel like
you would go down, you would grab a pre-nerf Infectious Ego and you would copy it and your opponent would get hit by 2 Infectious Ego triggers. And then if you got to untap, you would swing with the Infectious Egos. It's like, yeah. So when you're paying mana for these effects, they're quaint and they're still good, but they're not like broken in this kind of very visible sense. And the tuning that the deck did just allowed it to play this kind of ridiculous game in a bunch of different ways.
So now that you bring up Infectious Ego, that is a card talk about cards that I have some harsh words for. I'm not, you know, you probably already know my thoughts on this, so I'm not going to go into it, but there's just like, you know, obviously there's been tons of bullshit in MSEM, many of which designed by me. So, you know, this isn't too far out of the ordinary, but yeah, I did not like that card.
I think a really important thing to acknowledge is, you know, of these 10 bannings, this isn't including the like, you know, dozen or so cards that were nerfed in a way that wasn't like equivalent to banning, but does mean that their original designs are not visibly still in the format.
Yeah, like they're either a different card or they're just trash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think one of the really funny things to me about Infectious Ego is specifically the fact that Herzy came up with a design and was like, you know what, I liked the design seed based on how much Herzy enjoyed playing against Shieldbreaker in Revolution. And just, that's not a sentiment I can relate to.
Yeah, I was not aware of that. I actually wasn't aware that there was a single person who enjoyed playing against Shieldbreaker. which, you know, I mean, that's cool. Good job, Egg. I mean, I thought Shieldbreaker was, like, an interesting layer to the format.
Yeah.
And it was cool that we had it in the state we did for a while, and now that it's, you know, after we, you know, brought it back down to Earth, then it was kind of just like a fun little guy. But yeah, you know, so, Shieldbreaker, I definitely think Infectious Ego was worse than Shieldbreaker at its best.
I think that is a fair statement.
Worse to play against, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. more powerful.
Yeah.
Briefly touching the, you know, to kind of run through some of the other bannings, Grasp for Understanding, Lotus Studies, and Scintillate were all banned for very, you know, similar reasons. Red Storm.
Oh, yeah. Should we have the ritual talk or not?
No. We'll do that another time.
We're just going to skip that. Yeah. Because we only have, you know, finite time.
And God knows the ritual talk is infinite time.
Yeah, exactly. Should we talk about the card I designed on this list?
Yeah, let's talk about Reef Crown Egg.
Okay. Cool. So, Reef Crown Egg, the original version, I don't actually remember what it was, but it was some garbage. Like, you know, I designed it, and then the set was in MCM, and nobody was playing it because it was terrible. I was like, hey, what if I redesign this thing? So I made it kind of like an Aether Vial that scales off of drawing cards, so you can potentially, like, you know, above it faster. And the idea was, you know, you can use it with cycling to kind of speed up the process, but you can only use it one time. And I thought that was kind of cool, right? But obviously, when you put it into a format where there's, you know, a bajillion card draw effects and ways to do this very quickly, it suddenly becomes an explosively powered ritual. And so obviously the design's flawed, but I think, you know, I was happy with the concept of the design. I like the aesthetic of being like the Aether Vial twist. So I was like, I would rather just ban this card. I don't think I can get it in, you know, to represent the design I want while being balanced in this format. So, you know, just give it the X. So, like, kind of what I talked about before, just like it's okay to just ban cards. You know, you don't have to rework everything.
Yeah. One, the original Reef Crown Egg, because I was curious, is basically the same thing, but it says when you draw your second card each turn rather than when you draw a card.
Oh, yeah, that card's hot garbage.
Yeah, so it just doesn't scale up at any reasonable rate. It just does nothing.
Let's go.
And yeah, I think one Reef Crown Egg is actually a really cool, like, I think it's a card that could pretty trivially be unbanned now that we took another hard and fast stance against some of the cards that, like, were making it broken, i.e. all the one mana cantripping ETB artifacts that we had for some reason.
Right, that was a whole thing, yeah. I think I would rather just have it remain banned, because I'm not sure
I think it's a good card. Used... I think it's a good card to have on the ban list, because I think it actually is a very informative card.
Yeah. If it gets used, I'm not sure I'd ever be happy with the way it gets used competitively. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
Relatedly, I have two cards on this ban list, one of which is Reinvent, which was banned for similar crimes to Reef Crown Egg, as just it was a really good way of cheating on a bunch of mana in artifact decks. And given that the design seed for that card was, what if I tried to balance Tinker for MSEM? I'm kind of okay with the fate of it ending up on the ban list. Like, in some ways, that means I succeeded at making it Tinker-like. I just failed at the whole balance it for MSEM thing.
For what it's worth, I like the design of it much more when it was just a flat 8-mana affinity.
Yeah.
I think it definitely, like, gets across the Tinker vibe much more than like, it being a variant on Wur.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's just my thought. But, yeah. What's the other one on this list? I'm missing it.
Instant of Brilliance.
Is this the one that if you have two of them, it just kills them?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. Cool.
this was banned for Red Storm Crimes.
Nice.
And actually, when we banned Instant of Brilliance, or actually they banned, I was not on the council at that point, I don't think, they unbanned Unleash the Dragon. It was like a prisoner release situation. Unleash the Dragon, hoping that along with the two rituals banned, plus draw 7 in Grasp for Understand, they were like, okay, this will send the message that, you know, there's unacceptable ways of playing Storm in this format. Please be careful.
basically with Unleash the Dragon, it's like the government tries to do a Storm prohibition, and then it doesn't work out.
Yeah.
And then you got to be like, okay, take a little.
Yeah, you can have this one back. We're going to take the actual broken one. you know, wouldn't you know it, this GP was in, one of the decks that was in the finals was Mono Red Storm, so you really can't keep a good deck down.
Nice. Okay.
Although, well,
I mean, I don't know, I think Storm should exist. I think Storm should be competitive.
I think it is super reasonable for Storm to exist. I think whenever Storm starts turn two killing people, it becomes really hard to justify Storm existing. And that's a really difficult thing to kind of dodge around, but
yeah, so we're dangerously close to the,
yeah.
But I will just say one of the biggest frustrations that I had with managing the MSEM format was I feel like people were focusing really heavily on the high roll moments of a deck.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like a bit too quick to make a judgment based on like the best performance of a deck, I guess, is what I felt like.
That this version of Mono Red Storm and some of the cards that are like being targeted for nerfs, which are like basically the Seething Song variants, the like ways of going up from 4 mana to I can hard cast a dragon calling mana. I think a lot of the logic around this specific Storm deck was actually pulling off those turn 2 kills and a lot of turn 3 kills, like with a much higher consistency than any of the other decks that people have cried wolf about in the past. Like, you know, people memed about the turn two Infectious Ego decks, and those were never actually particularly competitive. They just, like, sometimes ruined someone's day. But people both played this deck in the GP and also played it in leagues, and it was getting those goldfish kills really fast and reliably.
Yeah. And I think, you know, once you have, like, you know, enough of a, like, a reasonable, I mean, you build a case, right?
Yeah.
I think if you determine that, then by all means, like, take Storm out back and shoot it. But yeah.
And then the last card to touch on this ban list really quickly is Vivid March. Animus Vox accidentally added another couple copies of one of the combo pieces for the other half of Vivid March.
And... Let me guess. It's a pinger that untaps when you get an artifact.
No, there's one that's a pinger when an artifact enters under your control, and there's another one that's a pinger when an artifact you control dies.
Dang. Okay. Well, I tried. That's kind of funny because this card was like hot garbage for the entire time that I was playing. So
yeah,
for you, Vivid March.
The combination of Karina's expeditions, I can never remember, added like two or three cards that comboed with Vivid March, and still no one touched it. And then Animus Vox added another two, and people were like, finally, like, okay, fine, let's try this. And it was just like, you know, it did the exact thing that I was discussing earlier. It had
So you run like 16 pingers and a bunch of tutors for the Vivid March or something like that.
That is like the meme version. The good version was basically, I don't know if you remember the MacGuffin like Artifact Aristocrats deck.
There must be some way to tutor both or something like that.
No, it just was a really good Artifact Aristocrats deck that could also kill you with Vivid March.
Cool.
Yeah.
Nice. Love it.
There were 7 unbannings while you were gone. We unbanned Mercantile Accords. We did not change it at the time. It has now been changed, like, literally this month.
Really?
But during that whole time, it was just basically not showing up anywhere. But if it was showing up anywhere, it was just to make Zangy upset.
It hasn't been changed yet.
Correct. It will be in a couple days.
What is the upcoming change going to be?
It is whenever an opponent casts a spell of the chosen mana value, you get a treasure and draw card, I think.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
So I thought this card was designed by just nobody, right?
Yes.
So on Gatherer and on the card, the designer credit is listed as Water the Weeds?
Yes, there was a rebrand.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Cool. So, yeah, I mean, I'm kind of surprised that the council actually decided to unban this card. Not because I necessarily think it was definitely too strong, but just because I feel like there's a very visceral hatred for this card, both on the council and in the community. So I was surprised that like it came back at all.
Yeah, I think it was an attempt to do some like prisoner exchange, or like, we want to simplify our ban list a little bit. Is this even too good? Or I think, oh God, no. Sorry, this one was actually really bad. The logic here, if I remember correctly, was in that era that we were discussing earlier, where we had these like really good tempo decks with low cost threats, there was some amount of discussion of what are some ways we can punish these decks. And one of the suggestions that came up is, what is our closest to Chalice of the Void? Because Chalice of the Void is good against Delver. And Mercantile Accords was partially removed off the ban list as a, well, maybe this can act as a stopgap if like CMC 1 decks ever become too good again.
I see. Which
I think there is some flawed logic there, but like I respect the effort. The next 4 cards were all removed from the ban list during 1 May Madness, if I remember correctly. So Aether Leak, Chi Gao, Poisoned Well, and Sentinel of Outer Days all came off the ban list at the same time. Which I think most of them joined the ban list at a pretty similar time frame. I think Aether Leak was banned before the other 3, but the other 3 were all banned as part of the first May Madness.
Wait, do I think Torment Lands on this list?
Torment Lands got completely reworked during that time, like a month or so ago.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm looking at Towering Vows on Instigator right now. It looks like this is a undercosted man land with the price of tormenting yourself when it attacks.
Yep. Nice. That's the cycle now. I think it's a really cool idea.
Good redesign, gateways. Like it. Do we have it for all of them, or let me see. I can't remember the names of all of them.
I think it's just the allied ones right now. I think the enemy ones are still a work in progress. Or they may have happened and I just completely forgot it.
Okay, it looks like the enemy ones are still the old version, and I assume are still banned.
Yeah. And Qigao is the only one of those four that got removed from the ban list without any changes, which I think is really funny. I think just Qigao is a very good card, but there's an aspect to which the access that it was kind of fundamentally broken on of just like insane amounts of card inevitability and just like control decks not being able to beat it.
It just outscaled.
Some of it is outscaled. Some of it is control decks now have main deckable enchantment removal and also have playable exile spells. But I think Qigao is still like a very good card.
That's cool. So it's kind of like a Jace the Mind Sculptor situation.
Yes, I think Jace the Mind Sculptor is a very good comparison point, partially because similar to Jace the Mind Sculptor, almost no one plays Qigao these days.
I think you could have people argue whether Jace should have actually been banned in the first place, but.
I think there are some people that would argue about that. I think they're a little bit insane. So let's hop forward to the champions. So there's been 42 champions since you left, but the five we're going to highlight are the ones that you designed.
Oh, nice. Okay. I'm not sure I've seen any of these. So two of these are no longer the same card, right?
Correct.
I'm assuming they were championed before
before you changed them.
Yeah.
Idyllic Odyssey and Corelight Champion are those two.
Yeah, those were not well designed cards. I like the new Corelight Champion, although I'm assuming no one plays it.
I think someone was discussing it recently, but I don't remember.
Oh, nice. Okay. That's cool. Idyllic Odyssey. I don't want to talk about Idyllic Odyssey.
that's a separate podcast, actually.
That card. Idyllic Odyssey. I think it was a fun idea. You know, I was trying to do. I think back then I was definitely really into like call outs. I started the whole like alliterative bird enchantment mega cycle, which is hilarious. Like that whole thing is really funny to me. But this card, the first version was just a very poorly thought out design. For those who don't know, it created a Merfolk on ETB, and then it had a Luminarch Aspirant trigger that happened if you get an artifact. Well, it happened if you had Concord, but because it filled out three of the four already, it was basically just a one-mana Luminarch Aspirant if you had an artifact. That was not a balanced card. So the new version, I tried to have it be like, hey, look at me, I'm the White Sights Beyond, which was the original impetus for the design, and then after a while, I was kind of like, hey, isn't this card kind of busted still? Especially for limited. So now it's like, you know, I removed the scry. You know, it's like a fine card. Probably still decent, but.
Yeah, I think it's one of those, like, it is a Bitter Blossom side grade at this point. And I think most people in MSCM would not willingly register Bitter Blossom. Partially because of biases, partially because, like, actual decision.
This card to me kind of represents a lot of the growing pains that go along with learning how to release something you made to a player base.
Yeah.
How I put it? Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. Eye of the Beholder was a champion for Contratown, if I remember correctly, which is a infinite mana combo deck that involves playing a land a bunch of times. So, you know, kind of in your vein.
That is a gruesome champion art. But.
Yeah. Then Olsen's Flockmaster, I believe, was a either league or season champion from Purple. because Purple is spamming blue-red pirates.
Yeah, and I remember seeing, once this card started seeing play, I was like, maybe this card is not balanced for limited. kind of getting that vibe. but, you know, it's fine, guys. No one plays limited anyway, so we're good.
And Lord of the Bubble Dome is the most recent one of them because Murpho now starts
my
popping
boy.
Up.
That is honestly, I feel like I did a pretty good job designing this Lord.
Yeah.
And I'm really happy that there is a legit Merfolk deck now. I believe I was informed the other day of a few judiciously balanced cards that may have boosted that archetype. But that's awesome. I mean, there's a couple Amare reps in there. I'm a fan.
Yeah, there was a Fish group chat where they were just like, you know, talking about and tuning different versions of Merfolk. And I know one of them was like much more heavy on the Slipstream cards, just because if you get to a certain density of Slipstream threats plus Lords, you can just pump damage. You kill people who are creature decks, basically.
I mean, that is cool. I think I like the Lord of the Bubble Dome design like a lot in theory, because it's like unblockability is you know really good in a vacuum, but to have it scale, you need to be much more mana intensive than a Merfolk deck is traditionally. So I like that it kind of self balances a little bit.
Yeah, it's not the like kind of Lord of Atlantis situation where when it's on, it's just on for all of your creatures all the time.
Yeah, yeah. So that's cool.
One of the other things that has happened since you left and since the podcast ended was I actually won 2 GPs, which
let's go.
Yeah, when I won the first one of those, it had been 4.5 years since I'd won an MSCM GP.
That's crazy. Wait, so what decks were you piloting?
Yeah, so for the first one in Grand Prix Ultec, which was August 2023, I was playing Jeskai Mabel. It was a list of purples that had done well, might have won a GP a couple months prior, and I reached out to Purple and said, okay, Purple, I want a deck that runs Cosmic Sinkhole that I can go 2-2 in a GP with and feel like slightly misled about playing it. And Purple said, grab Jeskai Mabel and like make a couple small updates. And I did end up winning the GP. So I immediately reported him for giving me a GP winning deck list instead of a 2-2 deck list, since that was entirely unreasonable of him.
is this the original Cosmic Sinkhole or the new one?
I won it with the original Cosmic Sinkhole.
Gotcha. Okay. Cool.
And yeah, the deck is just, you know, a Jeskai flash, like tempo-ish, a control deck that is on the more tempo side of control. Like, you don't have the ability to beat down, but you are still, like, pressuring people's life total with burn spells and creatures turning sideways. And just, like, a lot of instant speed, card advantage, and counter magic. So definitely my happy place.
What did you say was the name of the GP? I'm trying to look at the list.
Ultecht. Ultecht.
Huh.
Are you looking at
it? Is it Utrecht?
Oh, did I just miswrite it? I think I just miswrote it.
Okay. Is this the one that titled Purple Told Me To?
Yes.
Okay. They don't have the names on a lot of these anymore.
Gotcha.
Oh, so, you know, it's been so long since Dark Seas of Shirion was added. How does the community feel about First Mates? You know, I mean, like, it seems like Mabel is still seeing play. It looks like Garth never got changed. So, like, are people still playing a lot of Garth, or what's up with that?
I think every single time I've registered Garth in the past like year, I have regretted it. I think Garth is kind of in this spot where people will include Garth when it's literally free, and even then, he's sometimes not good enough. He's kind of in the Adam spot, I think, is the way to put him.
He's in the what spot? Oh, Adam, the little
Adam with an iron side. I think for the most part, people mostly like First Mates. There's a bunch of them that I think see less play than they should. Like, we started this episode talking about Holcomb. Holcomb hasn't seen play since you won a GP with him.
Wait, really? Wait, I love that guy.
And the card's entirely reasonable. And the card pool has just gotten deeper since then. So,
that deck was actually so much fun to play. Like, it's like you're playing Hearthstone, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
You got two of each card. I'm digging it. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that guy should come back. Nothing's stopping that. People have played some Harriet decks, but all of them have kind of sucked.
Yeah, that card, it looks like it should be good, but there's just not, like, enough.
Yeah.
It needs, like, some very specific support, I feel like.
And there's a couple other things.
So we nerfed one of them, the Black
Queen. We nerfed Hugo pretty badly. And
oh, that guy was really good. Yeah.
Yeah, that guy went from being every single time to once a turn, and people just dropped him immediately. I think some of those changes also happened around the time that, like, we nerfed other aspects of Black Red Burn, and, like, the Unearthed players like Ghoulish Awakening. The Black Red one from Alcaba. I can't remember the exact name.
Yeah, Ghoulish Unearthing.
Ghoulish Unearthing. So they like that too much to want to be on Hugo.
Okay, fair enough. Oh, they actually, people were playing the blue-black one too, right? Cyril of the Tempest?
Yeah, there was a deck that El Makino built that used Cyril, but I don't think it was like particularly nutty. It was just kind of...
Looking at this, it looks like basically all of the original 10, except for Harriet, have seen some play.
Yeah, I think that's a fair description. People have played Harriet decks in League, they just haven't been good.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. That's cool, though. Yeah. I'm glad that you know, because I think the concept of companion is, like, you know, workable, and it just kind of sucks that WotC missed with it, but I think First Mate is a much better try, so that's cool.
Yeah, and I think the fact that the format did not become First Mates until the end of time, and, like, we got some new First Mates in Over the Horizon, Veer of the Starskipper, I think is what he's called, actually sees, like, quite a bit of play.
Yeah. You know. So, okay, Grand Prix Zanzibar.
Yeah.
Heart Attack? Okay.
It always comes back to this.
So that was this month.
That was this month.
You just won? Hey, let's go.
Yeah, I beat Skagra in the finals. Skagra was playing Mono Red Storm. Actually, the Grand Prix, the Jeskai Mabel win was also versus Skagra on Contra Town. So I'm now 2-0 in Grand Prix Finals versus Skagra Combo decks.
Wait, is it weird that I'm actually shocked that Heart of Zadina is still in the same state?
The main thing is, the only people who play this card are, like, Cyber and me. And I think there's a good chance that if other types of spikes played this card, they could find use cases for it that the council would be less on board with. But I think Heart Attack is kind of a perennial, like, 3-1 lose in top 8 deck.
I see. This is an interesting looking list. There's actually no what's the card that kills people?
Oh, the Torment of Hailfire mistake.
Mastery of the Veil.
Yeah. Is that card still the same? Yep. Cognic Coalescing is kind of that card, but, like, infinitely better.
I see. Okay, so basically you're like, we don't need to spend, like, 12 mana to kill you. We're fine with spending, like, 20 mana to kill you. Is that the idea?
Yeah, so Cosmic Coalescing can also tutor a copy of Heart of Zadina. So it's slot compression on that front. And you can cast it on end step, deal them some amount of damage, and then grab a copy of the Red Calamity out of your sideboard, Bloodstained Calamity. And
I see.
That is a 12 mana to kill you.
Oh, so, yeah, you're right. Oh, I never thought about that.
Okay. Cosmic Coalescing is just a much more versatile card.
Yeah, I mean, that card, when I saw it, I knew that, like, it was gonna go places.
Yeah.
Like, you put a wish that flexible into this format, and, like, people are gonna do all kinds of crazy stuff with it. Alcuma actually has three different wishes, right?
It has that, it has the Lineage one, which wishes for cards with the same name, creatures with the same name, out of your sideboard.
Yeah, you get any number of creatures with the same name.
And it has Hidden Garden Entrance.
Yeah, that's the other one I was thinking of.
Okay, that's funny. I think it's just those three, but yeah. In general, prior to me playing Grixis Heart Attack this month, and I played it in League of last month, but then ended up tricking myself into playing a different deck in the GP. Most Heart Attack lists have been banned, and Cyber's been playing them.
I see.
With like Children of the Clouds as one of its like big X spells, and using a Johnny as its untapper. This list, you know, prior to this month, I wasn't on an untapper in Grixis. I was just like, we don't need one. And this Month printed Salome, who is getting nerfed. It, I think, is the most powerful planeswalker I've played within an MSCM.
Okay, so we get three activations of these abilities if you cast another spell. You can Teferi plus, and then lets you free cast an enchantment or creature. Kind of odd. Graveyard with flash, also a wrath. Oh, so what you can do is you can play this, you can draw two, untap some lands, cast a spell, and then you wrath and you keep your walker.
Yep. That's or the other thing that more commonly happens with this deck is you plus, you untap, you cast another spell, you untap.
Oh, you can do it again.
You then hold the man up, and on your opponent's turn, you cast like a Cane Dancer, not in this deck, or a Shanjun's Command in this deck.
Oh, like, Cane Dancer does just auto trigger this, yeah.
And then if you cast two spells on your opponent's turn, then you wrath them at instant speed after drawing four cards and untapping four lands.
Most powerful planeswalker ever in MSCM is a pretty high bar.
That certainly that I've played, but this card won me games that literally Crane wouldn't have.
Wait, what card? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, this card was winning me games that, like, you know, if I had a Turi or an Elsin Crane or a Velier, I would lose those games.
Well, are you talking, like, most powerful once those on the board or, like, strongest card?
Mostly most powerful once it's on the board.
I see what you mean. Okay.
I felt like this deck, like, did not have that much trouble resolving it, but also, like, I think MSCM has mostly... Okay, it is not the most powerful planeswalker I've played against an MSCM. I never played Zetla decks. But Zetla's more powerful than this. I will say that.
I feel like the old like that card is something I definitely would have played a lot of if I were around when it was. Like,
yeah, I think that's true.
Okay, so, you know, you've won two very recent GPs. You're probably an authority on what the meta looks like right now. So, what does the meta look like right now?
So people keep dropping decks the second we nerf like a single card from them, you know, nothing has fundamentally changed.
Some things never change. Yeah.
But the three kind of big decks from the past couple months, I would say, that like are the decks that I would definitely be excited to tell someone about, are three monocolor decks. So for a little bit there, MSCM's best mid-range decks were all a monocolored, which is kind of wild to think about conceptually. Mono black pools was like a major meta force. One of the big changes for that deck was Nongjao and Bloom brought us like good 3-mana demons. So now Profane Emissary, even if it didn't have like Pulp Pools to tutor up, or like you already had a Pulp Pools, it still kept drawing you actual cards. Both Nongjao and Bloom and Pan Zhao, because we had the... One of the gods is like a demon ox god.
Yeah, I think I remember it's like some really long name, like Kai Mo Wong or...
Yeah. Mo Wong, Ashen Absolution, I think. Anyway.
That is a mouthful, the name.
That and Kaizo from Nongzhao and Bloom just basically meant the deck had like actual utility demons it could tutor up, which was a huge power level boost to Profane Emissary, which was already a good card. So that was kind of sick. And I think in general that deck just kind of had it all. It had like some really good card advantage. It had, you know, Bloodjade Prophet. It had some really aggressive starts. It had Valdez for hand attack plus threats. Like, it really just kind of had every angle covered.
Oh man, I would really love to trigger a Bloodjade Prophet again.
That card
was incredibly fun to play.
Nuts. No, I mean, nothing has changed.
Isn't there a canon card which is literally Bloodjade Prophet's ETB and it's like 5 mana?
I can't remember.
Let me look this card up. Okay, it's from Ravnica. Like the original Ravnica set.
Oh, are you thinking of Night Market, I think is what it's called?
No. It's called... Oh, crap. Wait, hang on.
Because I think it's the one that...
I found it. It is called Moonlight Bargain.
Yeah, okay, Moonlight Bargain, Night Market.
It is a 5-mana instant, but it actually looks at the top 5 cards, not the top 3. Okay.
Okay, so what I'm hearing
egg,
is
that egg has earned a little bit of benefit of the doubt.
Egg can give a little buff to Bloodjade Prophet, is what I'm hearing.
I mean, you know, power crept rare from Ravnica is not exactly, you know, national news. So I wasn't leveling this as a legitimate criticism. I was more just like, oh hey, I just noticed this.
In addition to mono black pools, we had mono white pools, or angel pools. This deck also used white counter magic that has now been removed from the format, partially because of this deck. And just also like a couple of, there was Divine Mandate, I think, was the card. It was something that Scribble designed that produced very unscribble play patterns.
I see.
That now no longer does that. I think in general, Mono White Pools was a very interesting deck because it was just kind of this mid-range deck that had a lot of go-over-the-top potential while, you know, literally being a Mono White deck. One of the other Pulp Pools abusers in the deck was a card from Beyond Your Ken, which is white and two for exile up to one target creature.
And it costs, I remember that card.
The deck could do some very silly things with that. And the third, like, monocolor deck worth discussing is Mono Red Fireweaver.
I'm very familiar with that deck because I pop in and I look at decks people are playing every now and then.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Because Fireweaver, it is the guy that, like, if you run a 60 card deck, then he has a powerful effect, right? Or an 80 card deck.
80 card deck, it's a 2-drop instead of a 4-drop.
Right.
It's a 2/2 that allows you to impulse cast a red instant or sorcery card until the end of your next turn from outside the game.
Yeah, that's a really strong card because that was part of a whole cycle from the Cirque de Vizari set, right? Like that would have been crazy if all five of those cards were added at the same time, right?
Yeah,
I'm guessing most of them are probably near the same power level.
I think actually most of them were like noticeably weaker than Fireweaver. When I looked at them, but I might be misremembering.
Yeah, like, I mean, I think it's kind of crazy actually how much support mono red gets in this format.
Like
Theory of Antiquity. I still think Rapacious Rattler is like a unbalanced card personally, but
it did get nerfed since you last complained about it. It's now.
Yeah, I still think this card is.
You still think the resulting card's egregious? That's fair.
Wait, okay. So instead of casting Flames of the Firebrand, we cast Arc Trail.
Yep.
Is this card better than Goblin Chain Whirler? Yes.
Yeah, probably.
Is Goblin Chain Whirler something that we can power creep? Maybe?
Probably not, but like maybe?
I don't know. Okay, jury's out. It's more defensible now, yeah.
Certainly back when it was a 3-drop that immediately killed 3 creatures, impossible to defend, I think.
I did not like that old one. How big of a hit do you think this deck takes when Leafdown Sizzle Mage is nerfed?
So this deck already took a pretty large hit. The large hit that it took was we moved Fireweaver up from being 80 card deck to being an 100 card deck.
Oh. Okay.
So now it's noticeably less consistent, which I think. So that was a change I pushed for. I think that's a pretty healthy direction to take the deck. Or like, I think one of the things that Fireweaver kind of promises is you take slight reduced consistency, but you get this like high upside effect that kind of gives you consistency back. And the truth is, 60 to 80 cards is not a meaningful consistency like shift. You know, you fill out a couple of play sets, and that's.
I think we learned that from Yorian, you know.
I would agree. Yeah, Yorian was should have been illuminative.
Well, you know, I think you can give the designer some benefit of the doubt because like there is much more of a consistency hit when you have to like actually find the card in your deck.
Yeah, it doesn't start in your opening hand every game. Yeah. Although the mono red Fireweaver decks seem to always have that card in like the top 10 cards of their library, and they always had a turn one Ragavan. I have no idea, like. I played a Fireweaver deck, and I always had the turn one Ragavan. I have no idea how you do it.
Wait, is Ragavan referring to like a card that's like Ragavan, or?
Oh, right, yeah. Okay, so in the Jumpstart set, one of the
pirates
was Ragavan. He's important to Pirate Tribal. You love Pirate Tribal.
I do.
Well,
I mean, I like pirates. Yeah. I like One Piece. So okay, so this is oh, okay. Well, that doesn't seem that bad, honestly. Like,
honestly, I think it's a card that people like fear more than it deserves, is how I would put it.
It's one of those things. Okay, here's my analogy. Here's my analogy. Mm-hmm. Do you remember when Sanito was released in Masters of Chikyu?
Yes.
Everyone was like, three fury, three fury, three fury. And I was like, guys, this card is not good. Like,
what if we took three Teferi and we removed all of the things that made three Teferi broken and we gave it different upsides that were not relevant?
By the way, side note, I don't think three fury is broken. I think people are babies.
I hate that card and I don't care about it. I just hate it.
Hating it is fair. I don't think it's broken.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Topically to Ragavan, Blue Red Pirates was a deck, as mentioned earlier with Olsen's.
Yeah. I mean, this card's definitely still good, for sure.
Yeah. And we talked about Merfolk a little bit. Reanimator is a deck that like kind of existed back when you were around, but not really. Like the main cheat out deck was the Eureka deck.
I think Reanimator was kind of something that people didn't really pursue that seriously. But I think you probably could have played it successfully a long time ago.
One of the big level ups for that deck was your dragon, who I've immediately forgotten the name of in this moment.
Azos.
Yes. Azos was a huge increase in strength to this deck.
I'm pretty happy with that card.
One of the other things related to Azos that was like good is that there was a card called, I think it Wilting Lotus or something, in Beyond Arcane that like produced Lotus Petals every turn, which you could use to accelerate yourself into a turn for like reanimation plus hold up counter magic, but it also just increased the amount of gains where you could just like hard cast a 7-drop.
Oh, true. Yeah, well, okay, how do you feel about getting hit by an Azos? Like, is it on the right level of like, I would say the ideal reanimation target for format health is something like Archon of Cruelty. Is it kind of like around that?
I have never gotten Azos'd. I have Azos'd people. and I have had very few games where I've lost when I've Azos'd people, but it has happened. So
okay. I'll take that.
Yeah.
One other thing I noticed when I was scrolling through these lists is that there's a polymorph deck. And there is a card that I designed that actually appears to be the polymorph target of choice, Dredgeline Colossus.
Yes.
So that's kind of cool.
Yes.
Why is that card the polymorph target of choice?
The person who's running it preferred it over Desert Worms because it kills faster and it helps support the like kind of control game plan a little bit better. It's also a card where if you put multiple of them into play, it's like still good. So that's better than like the legendary cheat out targets you could do.
Cool. Yeah. That's awesome. I mean, I always liked that design.
I was
excited to see, you know, if it would be used, and I don't think it was really, so that's cool.
One other thing related to Reanimator is for a little bit, I think it's Burial at Sea. What's the Almari Entomb?
Oh yeah, Buried at Sea.
Yeah, we hit Entomb density. Which meant that people could
play that card now?
Yeah,
no
so
way.
It showed in a version of Reanimator that ran a Animus Vox card called Chaos is Your Redemption. That is, do you remember Signal to Clans?
Is that like a... No, I don't
it's
remember.
It's from RTR Block. Anyway, what Chaos is Your Redemption does is you tutor up three non-creature cards with CMC 3 or less.
Right.
You choose one of them at random and cast that one without paying its target. It's 3-drop. And the deck just so happened to have access to three mana or less entombs and three mana or less reanimate effects.
That is so funny. Wait, I love that.
So
you're welcome,
could...
guys. I made a bad entomb just for you.
This just filled the other half of the combo that you needed.
Let's go! This is the kind of thing that makes modern formats so great, right?
Yeah.
Or like, just like Eternal formats, yeah.
No, you randomly come back and it's like, oh wait, this one card, we have finally found a use for this one card that was printed like literally 3 years ago. And now like people have to respect it.
I love that. Yeah, that's really nice.
So is it like the, that deck also involved bringing back a egg design that should have been forgotten from like 4 to 5 years ago, which was the graveyard order reanimation spell.
That fucking card, man. Did we hit it yet?
Yes, we hit it because we were just like, we cannot keep letting this be playable, which unfortunately did kill the Chaos is Your Redemption builds of the deck because they don't have three reanimation spells, CMC 3LS.
Ah, bummer. No.
Yeah, I think that was a very unfortunate loss, but like...
All right, someone make one. guest design. Let's go.
Someone take one for the team.
If next set that gets in, just beg their designer for a guest slot.
And then there were three other decks that I couldn't remember to what extent they were around back when you were playing, which was Death's Shadow. Really, you know, Zangy iterated a bunch on the archetype, Scribble played it a little bit.
Wait, is Herald of Oblivion good now?
Yes. Oh. Okay, you weren't around for that.
That card was trashed when I played.
Herald of Oblivion is good now, partially because we hit a density of Life Loss Matters effects. So between that plus Inked Summoner from New Horizons, plus another one that was added as part of the Jumpstart. You actually had density to like get benefit from doing that.
Good job, Zangy.
And people also figured out a good way to hybridize the deck with a new build of Casino Scam.
Oh boy, that sounds fun. That is actually really cool.
You could use Buy Time, set your life to zero, play out Herald of Oblivion, and then
just like, murder them.
Haste it. Wait, yeah.
How did no one think of this before? That's actually a really good combo.
And the deck also used Black Hole Musings from Beyond Arcane as like half of that combo.
Okay. So when my last GP, I won the finals by doing this combo with Nightmares Unseen and Zelvar's Defiance, which I think is a cantrip that gives something double strike, trample, and haste.
We just had to nerf that as a result of the Death Shadow stuff.
Oh, okay. Because I was like, I feel like people should be doing this more. And then, no one was doing it for a long time.
Yeah.
By the way, is Nightmares Unseen balanced? Like, I'm not actually sure. Are people playing it?
I think someone touched it, like, briefly around the time. It was shortly before the Selvar's Defiance nerf, because I brought up, like, that as an example of a deck that used Selvar's Defiance spell.
I guess Anita says it's balanced.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. MSEM has so many like skeletons in our closets where there are so many cards lurking around every corner that are actually, if you squint at them, not particularly balanced. Like we have I'm pretty sure we have a 4-mana one-sided mana flare that's just in a random old Koriko set that no one plays.
Cool.
And
wait, so Heartbeat of Spring, but 4-mana only for you?
Yeah. And it has some other upside. It has, like, sacrifice it, untap two target lands. Why would you do that? Because then you lose your mana flare, but sure.
Maybe if you have multiples? I don't know.
Yeah. I guess if you have five lands, you can make 12 mana, and then Master of the Veil will kill you. Let's go. It always comes down.
That's okay. Yeah. Cool. Well, I'm glad that Shadow is finally a thing, because we had so many years of like people trying to make it a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think
is it still good without Zelvar's Defiance?
I haven't seen. I don't think anyone's played it since that nerf.
Okay.
But I'm trying to remember what the nerf was. It might have just been not giving double strike anymore.
I can see that. I think if you do that, you could probably make it 1-mana.
Let's see. Silver's Defiance now reads, until the end of the turn, target creature control gain. Oh, it doesn't give haste. That's the change.
That's probably safer, yeah.
Yeah. It still cantrips. It still gives double strike trample.
Okay, so you can still murder people with that.
You can still... Blood River still exists. You can still fetch out a Blood River plus Zelvar's Defiance someone.
Oh man, that That just like suddenly flooded my brain with like so much dopamine just hearing the word Blood River.
We did nerf Blood River recently, by the way.
Oh, really?
It now only affects either, it's either only one or two creatures. I can't remember which. It doesn't
just one creature. Okay.
Yeah. So
yeah, I think that's very wise, but I am sad seeing that.
RIP to those wonderful games, but
I really wonder if there's just like a video of me playing Wanderfall somewhere. I would love to watch that.
I should be able to dig one up.
Maybe on Caillou's YouTube.
Yeah, Caillou's YouTube is possible. I would check Caillou's YouTube first.
There probably is one. I'll go find it, yeah.
I know that's like an era that I was doing a bunch of commentary, and I recently went back and rewatched a lot of the videos I did commentary on. And there were a lot of kind of cool games of that era. If anyone is feeling nostalgic for an era you didn't play MSEM in and just want to see like some of the wacky shit we got up to. Oh, Intrepid's back to being 3-mana.
Yeah, I saw that. It's like,
yeah.
Do you know that clip from Community? When like in season 6, episode 1, where there's the big frisbee cave in, and then Leonard finds the frisbee that he threw on the roof in like the 1980s,
mm-hmm.
and it Sweet Emotion starts playing, and he's like tears in rain. That's how I felt when I saw 3-mana Intrepid.
the Intrepid. The reason I brought it up is because I pushed for the Intrepid buff because I'd been watching old commentary games with 3-mana Intrepid, and I was like, you know what? Why did we decide to stop having fun? You know, like 3-mana Intrepid is a completely fine power level card for MSEM. We can survive this.
Yeah, I think back then it was probably still fine, but it was just like a little bit ubiquitous.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons Intrepid felt very stale is because we had like a couple of people who built mid-range and control decks that put it in every single deck they played. And
also there were some outlier lands for sure.
Oh, I mean, yeah, but also most of the outlier lands are still there.
Yeah, that's true. I Intrepid used to have Vigilance and now it doesn't, right?
Yes, although I think it lost Vigilance shortly after you joined the format.
Oh, really?
I know by the time you joined the format, it was down to being a 4-4 from a 5-5. And I think it lost Vigilance like around the Wanderfall era.
I think it's also worth noting that when Intrepid was at its height, we also had basic Snowlands, which definitely like
that's also true.
A lot. Yeah.
And like we had Pithwilt, but like I think they're just in general, there were a lot more decks where if you tapped out on 3 to cast Intrepid, they did not really have a lot of ways to punish you for doing that. And if the exchange of you picking up a non-basic from your deck and them killing it was really favorable to you because of how good the non-basics were. And like that's still true to some extent, but I think it's less true. Yo, wait, I just realized I've never seen someone cast Intrepid to find a Transplanted Citadel. Someone should get on that.
Transplanted Citadel.
It's the Discoveries of Akiva card that's the creature land that has affinity for artifacts as part of the activated ability.
Oh, this card. Was that always this card's name?
Since it had that effect, yes.
For some reason, I thought it had a completely different name. Okay, that's cool. Yeah, I like this design. It's a cool one.
All right. Yeah, I think that's most of the decks that I wanted to highlight, and we've done a bunch of the tangenting that I was hoping we would do.
Let's go.
So I hope everyone who listened had a good time. Expect to see some more The Other Modern content in the future, maybe featuring Dodger, maybe not. We'll see how things go.
Yeah.
See how the audience likes you.
Yeah, and thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it was a great time. All right. Thank you all for tuning in.